Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Iran sanctions. Trump channels Bush, comparing the current president's policy to one of his predecessors. Trump followed in Bush's footsteps by reimposing unilateral sanctions against Iran, and his policy towards the Islamic Republic might have even more similarities than just that, seeing as how his administration is also suspected of secretly pursuing regime change against the Mideast great power. The weaponization of economic instruments for geopolitical means isn't a new policy, but it's become the favored approach of the Trump administration over the past 2 years, though nowhere with as much fervor as what's being done to Iran right now. The president and his team proudly bragged that these are the toughest sanctions that the U.S. has ever promulgated, and notwithstanding the few temporary waivers that they issued, that's true. The U.S. wants to cut off Iran's access to international financing in order to compel it to make foreign policy concessions as a result of what they predict will be intensified grassroots pressure once the general population begins to suffer. Of course, Washington insists that these sanctions won't harm average Iranians, but it's impossible to consider that a credible statement because they'll be the first people to bear the brunt of these sanctions if their government curtails any of its social and infrastructure spending in the face of an impending economic crisis caused by Trump's policy. The waivers have certainly bought the country some time, though, and it's possible that workaround channels and the use of national currencies in all transactions will help cushion the blow of this asymmetrical attack against it. But the real danger to Iran's partners comes from the U.S.'s threatened secondary sanctions. Secretary of State Pompeo promised that the U.S. will ensure that it's costlier for any country or company to do business with Iran than to cut it off, warning that any violators would be banned from working with American entities. This could conceivably bring enormous economic hardships to foreign firms that depend on the U.S. marketplace for much of their revenue, thus pressuring them to curtail and ultimately close their Iranian operations. At the same time, however, the opportunity has now arisen for multipolar states, such as Russia and China, to resist the U.S. and make tangible progress in strengthening the basis for an alternative non-Western financial system, meaning that, unlike Bush's anti-Iranian sanctions, Trump's might possibly backfire. Gosh, folks, everyone is eagerly looking at the Mideast to see what's going to happen with Iran now that Trump reimposed sanctions. I mean, is it going to lead to the collapse of the country, or will Iran valiantly resist with minimal damage? So we're going to begin discussing this by speaking to Mr. Don Harder. He's an American and naturalized Russian citizen who has lived in St. Petersburg since 2004.
Trendstorm.
Generally speaking, how do you assess the U.S.'s weaponization of economic instruments such as sanctions for geostrategic purposes? How effective are they in pressuring the U.S.'s rivals?
I think that they're not that effective, actually. It actually causes a country to dig in. I don't think anybody can name an example of a country that's actually to the will of the U.S. just because they've been sanctioned. For example, Russia has developed infrastructure based on the sanctions, where as before they were really reliant upon European exports for products such as cheese, for example. Within weeks of the sanctions a few years ago, Russia was developing its own cheese markets. It stopped importing altogether. I think sometimes the sanctions do weaken public support and maybe encourage color revolutions in some of the smaller countries, but most countries, they just dig in their heels. And also, the sanctions, they're counterproductive. I think there's been 29 different sanction programs, according to the U.S. Treasury site, and most of those programs have been employed since 2016. So they're new programs. They're from the Trump administration. So he's really weaponizing the dollar with these sanctions. And what this has done is caused countries that are being essentially bullied to fight back against the bully, group together and come up with some alternative solutions. So, for example, Russia and China are both working on SWIFT alternative systems. China and Russia are working together to develop a blockchain digital technology, which is going to allow them potentially in the future to have a sort of a barter system between the two countries where the blockchain will work as a digital ledger, which will keep a tally on trade between the systems. So I imagine Russia would be selling oil to China and then buying products like telephones and things, and then they would keep a balance between the two. Yeah, they would avoid the dollar system altogether that way. Also, countries such as Russia, China, Iran, many different countries are stocking up on gold reserves because I think they're looking towards the end of the dollar hegemony, and they want to be prepared with their own systems that are, let's say, secure from a global contagion, you know, when the dollar weakens.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. And I like the point that you brought up about how the sanctions can actually backfire, as we see with the example of Russia and China, like you pointed out. Now, Don, when it comes to substance, symbolism, and also context, how do you compare Trump's unilateral imposition of anti-Iranian sanctions to Bush's from the mid-2000s?
Yeah, I think that the main difference is the support that the European community was providing to the Bush administration back in the 2006-2007. When Bush sanctioned Iran, they were able to do it through the banking system. And that's because the Europeans were in support of those sanctions. So they essentially de-swifted Iran. And so Iran was no longer able to do any sort of money transfer. The difference today is that Europe is not in support of these sanctions. Europe is continuing to agree to the JCPOA agreements, which means the U.S. is on its own here. And the U.S. has to find an alternative to the banking system type sanctions, and they're going directly towards the companies. So what they're doing is they're telling companies, if you do business with Iran, then you can no longer do business with the U.S. So there's no more U.S. contracts or anything. Those are all going to dry up. So I think essentially the difference is that the U.S. is more restricted this time.
Okay, well, you know, since we were just talking about Russia in the first question, and now, of course, we drew the focus over to Iran, I'd like to just kind of move over to China, which is the third main Eurasian multipolar great power. And I want to ask you about how the U.S.'s focus on Iran affects America's so-called pivot to Asia and the Chinese containment policy that Trump's also managing at the moment. Like, Don, will this give Beijing breathing space, or is it actually part of this anti-Chinese larger policy that we see the Trump administration playing out?
I think it's part of the pivot to Asia policy. It's definitely the focus on Iran is a focus on Chinese trading partner. One of the sources of energy for China, as you know, is Iran. So if they can harm their trading partner in that way, then it has an effect on the Belt and Road Initiative, which is an alternative trading route. So essentially, sanctions are, it's an act of war, like any other war, and wars are fought over trade routes. And right now, China's developing a trade route that is an alternative to the U.S. system that's been in action since the end of World War II. So the U.S. sees China as a competitor right now. And so an attack on Iran is an attack on the Belt and Road Initiative, and it's an attack on the petrodollar. So right now, we talked about the consequences of these sanctions earlier, and one of the consequences is that China has developed a new petro-yuan contract in response to potential sanctions. And so now, they instead of using the dollar to buy oil from different countries, specifically Iran in this case, they can actually just issue petro-yuan contracts and bypass the dollar system altogether. So this really has a huge impact on the petrodollar system because it could have a domino effect. If one country starts to do it, then other countries will realize, hey, it's we're open for business here, and the petrodollar goes, and then the dollar system is in big trouble. The dollar hegemony is in big trouble.
Don, thank you very much. I enjoyed our conversation and thought that it clarified a lot of things about the U.S.'s sanctions policy, both in general and specifically regarding Iran. Also, it was very intriguing how you connected all of this to the U.S.'s hybrid war on China's Belt and Road Initiative. That really gave us a lot to think about. Thank you again. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Puya Sharif has to say. He's an Iranian student activist from Germany and a regular on my program.
Trendstorm.
Do you expect the U.S.'s unilateral reimposition of sanctions to have a noticeable effect on the living standards of average Iranians? And if so, will the populace react as calmly as before, or could the latest protests over the past year inspire them to more actively make their frustrations known?
It's going to have actually effect on living standard of the people, as we've seen also in the case of the, let's say, first wave of sanctions. And this time would be even more tough because sanctions actually targeting the heart of the Islamic Republic economy. I mean, now the oil income, I'm talking about the oil industry. Of course, it's going to have some even direct effect on living standard of the people. But the thing is that, of course, I mean, that's the case exactly that the United States is counting on. I mean, they have their own mechanism to get the benefit of the, to move, let's say, this, to use this level of unsatisfaction in society to turn it into kind of so unrest, political unrest. And we know that they have ties, very clear ties with the MEK and the other Iranian opposition in exile. And they are running like successful media campaigns since some months, at least, very intensively. We know that Saudi Arabia is now recently established a new Persian television called Iran International, and they spend quite a lot of money behind that. And they're all connected to each other. That's the media part. And of course, they're going to organize some political unrest inside the country coming months to assert extra pressure on Islamic Republic.
Okay, I see. Well, I got to say, that's a very interesting perspective on how the sanctions are connected to the InfoWar. I really wasn't aware of the MEK's InfoWar operations. And I also did not know that Saudi Arabia opened up a Persian information outlet. So that's very interesting for us. Now, Pouya, how much relief do you think the U.S.'s sanctions waivers for a handful of countries in Taiwan could provide to Iran, bearing in mind that these are the largest consumers of Iranian energy? And why do you think Trump made the decision to temporarily hold off on imposing so-called secondary sanctions against them in the first place? What's going on here?
First of all, I'm going to give you some statistics regarding that. The overall Iranian oil exports, well, in April 2018 was around 2.8 million barrels per day. After that, Trump actually declared going out of the nuclear deal, the JCPOA I'm talking, it was reduced until September by 35%. The last prediction of the Bloomberg actually was that they're going to reduce even more by around 350,000 barrels per day after these coming sanctions. That's from one side, but now we know that President Trump actually gave some exemption to mainly American allies, I mean, except China here. Like in the list, there are like China, Japan, India, South Korea, not Europe, but Salvini, Italy. And the other statistic I want to mention is that, well, now in August, the level of Iranian exports to China, Japan, and India, the main three customers, they're like 1.1 million barrels per day. And South Korea also is purchasing now around 250,000 barrels per day. So in fact, actually, there is no rule of sanctions in the case of like international law I'm talking about. I mean, United States is not using that Security Council platform anymore. But what is ruling here as the rule of sanctions is actually the rule of free market here. I mean, that's open to the customers. That's how can I explain it? Like, you know, they have to calculate with the risk to run further oil trade with Iran. And what is clear is that they cannot reduce the oil export of Iran to zero. I mean, that's very clear. But it's going to hit, like, by my prediction, close to 50%.
Okay, well, thank you for citing those statistics. I mean, they really put everything into perspective and gave us an idea of the trajectory that the U.S. wants to take its allies, or the wavered countries at least, on when it comes to purchasing and reducing their share of Iranian resources.
I have to add as well that I trust, actually, Trump that he said he's going to keep the balance of the oil market. So that's also true. I mean, that's pretty much true.
Yeah, that is very important to keep in mind. And I like how you drew attention to the fact that these sanctions are illegal, because this brings me to the last thing I want to talk to you about, Pouya. And it's that China and Turkey said that they won't comply with the U.S.'s sanctions regime. And there are reports that the EU is considering the creation of workaround mechanisms for continuing its overall trade with Iran. So, Pouya, how probable is it that the U.S.'s plans backfire and an alternative financial system is formed? Are these realistic predictions or not?
Well, I believe that the European Union is trying actually to establish a channel, something like that, you know, for transaction and so on. Well, I mean, generally, the European Union is feeling threat from Trump's side. And what was the point that President Macron mentioned, citing, was yesterday or 2 days ago, about forming a European army and so on. That shows pretty much that European Union generally feeling threat. And they are seeking some sort of independence from United States, also financial one. But actually, what my prediction in this channel, this like the banking channel, let's say banking system, it wouldn't be that different from what's going on in European Union. I mean, they have some their own infrastructures in the case of finance, and like they call like the banking system is called like SEPA, if I don't make any mistake, SEPA. That wouldn't be that different, and I think even that structure, it wouldn't be that useful for Iran. I mean, I wouldn't be that like pessimistic or something like that, but the maximum would be, I mean, they're going to end something like the Iranian partner or let's say corporation or something like that, affiliated with Iran, open an account, for example, in some European countries, would be Germany, France, or another one, or Italy maybe. And well, they can, for example, they can continue like their oil trade, but then Iran is not possible allegedly to bring the money back to the country. That's my prediction. Maybe I'm so pessimist, but I believe it's quite realistic. And it's going to take a long time, actually, to establish some channel that is totally independent from SWIFT system.
Okay, Puya, as always, you presented a very realistic view on things, this time about what we can expect from the U.S.'s toughest ever sanctions. Also, you provided a pretty interesting take on how it all could backfire. So thank you for coming onto our program today. Much appreciated.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both Don and Puya shared with us today, we can see that while these are indeed the U.S.'s toughest ever sanctions, well, of course, the threat of secondary sanctions is going to send chills down the spine of many Western companies. There's also the chance that Russian, Chinese, and maybe even Turkish companies won't be that perturbed. So we can definitely see the beginning of an alternative non-Western financial system emerging. But having said that, it's going to be very difficult to create. I mean, this is just the beginning of something a lot larger. And it's going to take time to see whether or not anything succeeds at all, be it the creation of alternative non-Western financial systems and other aspects of multipolarity, or the success of the U.S.'s sanction policy in either changing Iran's foreign policy or overthrowing the government. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kurepko. Thank you for listening, and take care.